All right, everybody. Welcome to The Matthew Aaron Show, www.thematthewaaronshow.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Matt Aaron Show. Please do. I erased my Twitter last month in a bit of rage, and I guess when you erase it, it erases it for good. So I have no followers now. We're good on Instagram and Facebook, but need more on the Twitter now again. Or at least I'm told. I don't even know how this stuff works. You can go to the Facebook page, type in The Matthew Aaron Show, click like, and I'm also told that you were able to follow us there as well then, and you'll get all our information. Our producer, Pat Tobias, he does most of that, and he just tells me how it goes. I know the podcast is really hot right now over at Spotify, so if you want to catch up on any of the other 285-some episodes, including previous episodes with Peter Tolan, you can go over to Spotify or Apple Podcasts right now. Just like with Alan Loeb yesterday, all the previous episodes are there. And I'm here with Hillary Barraford again. Hillary, say hello.
Hi. Hey.
And then, of course, the one, the only, my dear friend who I love to death, Peter Tolan. And first, I have to tell Peter what Alan Loeb said about him yesterday. I feel like we don't have a lot to promo, I figured this is a good self-promotion for Peter. So we were on the phone with Alan Loeb yesterday, and Alan Loeb said his favorite show of all time that does not get talked about as much as it should in the pantheon of great shows is Rescue Me. He said it was his favorite show ever, and then he basically... You twisted my arm and said, next time I do dinner with Peter Tolan, I have to get him an invite. So Alan Loeb is a big fan and put you over pretty hard yesterday.
Yeah, yes, he did.
Life, this is actually how life balances out. Because earlier today, I was poking around someplace, and I saw Ken Levine, or Ken Levine.
Yes.
I never know which one he is. But I saw his... His blog.
Yeah.
And there was some, and I was sort of flipping around to different days and everything like that. And there was some article that was, the idea of it was, is there going to be a burst of creative energy spent on Corona-based television shows, movies, things like that? And I think most people were like, no, I don't think so. I think having lived it, no one's going to want to go, remember those happy days? Let's go back to that. I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, there may be. I don't even think there'll be like a Contagion 2. You know, I don't think there'll be that.
It's so funny.
It sort of morphed into a discussion about 9/11, and where they said, you know, there really wasn't any popular culture that sort of used that as a stepping off point mm-hmm. that was successful. And I'm scrolling down, just sort of waiting.
You're waiting?
Hopefully, to somebody, please, come to my defense. And it didn't happen. And, of course, modesty forbade me from going in there myself and saying, can I just bring up? So it's so nice that... Mr. Loeb.
Well, we had the same exact conversation on our show, and Alan is best friends with Scott Burns, the writer of Contagion, and he said the same exact thing. And then we were talking about 9/11 and how this incredibly great show came out of all that. But it didn't really, it wasn't about 9/11, but it was about 9/11, and it was something different, and it didn't pretend like it didn't happen. And that's when Alan and I were talking about how it's one of our favorite shows ever. So take that, Ken. Ken just watches like sitcoms, I think, anyways. I don't really know how much Ken knows about all of television, to be fair.
All right.
That's a big glaring miss for me, because like Rescue Me was like the definitive show that came out of 9/11. You couldn't, even when Rescue Me was trying not to be about 9/11, you couldn't get an article that didn't bring it up. It's weird that would be a miss from Ken's blog, but I wouldn't worry about it. You have an A-list writer in Alan Loeb and a bum like myself, and we say otherwise.
All right, I feel better.
Good.
I can continue on with the dick.
Good. And I'm hoping more people listen to Alan's interview than read Ken's blog, so we'll call it even.
Yeah.
So, but that does bring up an interesting question. Do you think, you know what, I think the answer is kind of obvious. There can always be something great that comes out of anything. But do you think there can be something great just like Rescue Me did not ignore 9/11? Is there a show, is there a movie, is there something maybe not about the coronavirus, but doesn't ignore its existence that's going to come out of this?
I don't know. I mean, I just think people are, you know, this is like a horrible 1-2 punch for Americans and, well, for the world over, but for Americans, because, you know, we're dealing with this really corrupt, awful government that yeah. we have in place right now. So you have that, and then you have their complete bungling of dealing with this, which has effectively made mm-hmm. the United States a third world country. So you got that. And so I don't know. I think maybe there'll be some ancillary product where somebody goes, yeah, I'm going to do a show about, you see, I always think shows are like antidotes to things. Like mm-hmm. people go, I don't want to think about that. Let me think about this.
Yeah.
Or their wish fulfillment, you know?
Yeah, so absolutely.
You would think, I've always thought that during this shithole of a presidency that there would be something like, you know, a West Wing or something like that that says, oh, look, here's government. Here's like a compassionate and hopeful government and not this fucking piece of shit that exists now. But that hasn't really happened either. So
no.
I don't know what's going on.
No, and Hillary and I've had firsthand experience.
It turns out hard to get that kind of content made.
Yeah, we've had firsthand experience on that because we had a movie we have a cast attached. It's a good cast. It's a cast that gets millions of dollars for any other film, but because it is in, like you said, it's like the West Wing. It's like it's like what the government should be, what politics should be, what everything should be, but no one's touching it. No one wants to do anything political right now. I mean, we've met with people for years about it. It's impossible to do anything yeah. political at the moment. It feels.
Yeah, it's you know, that's difficult in good times.
Yeah, right.
To do that. So you can
exactly.
imagine. I just think people feel brutalized by the news cycle. So they just, you know, they can't even get their head around doing anything in response to it or escape from it. I mean, there's plenty of escape. But,
yeah.
You know.
Well, it was just announced that
there's not the thing that says, here's the good version.
Yeah, and we were talking about with Alan, like, maybe now's the time to get those great romantic comedies out there and to get those comeback stories out there and you know, those Frank Capra-esque movies out there. I think, you know, that's the obvious direction to take this if you're Hollywood, at least immediately. Maybe after a while, you can do darker material again. But I'm wondering how many people are going to want to watch dark material once this is done with.
They want to win.
Yeah. I think they just
need
want
to win.
Something that, hey, it's all going to be okay. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a pussy to begin with.
Matt,
yeah. No, I was just saying.
Think about.
Go ahead.
I just heard that CBS, the TV series All Rise, is doing an entirely remote episode, I believe, about quarantine and about coronavirus. What do you guys think about that as a move?
I mean, I told you last night, if they're able to make that work with Zoom and Skype, if you're not aware, All Rise is, I believe it's a show either on CBS or on All Access.
Yeah,
and they're doing this episode with Zoom and Skype and all the web conferencing and whatever, and they're going to do a show. And I said to Hillary, I don't see how any chance in hell that's any good. However, if it is good, congratulations, more power to you. That's an amazing feat to pull off. I mean, I have problem with Zoom from one room to the next room, let alone doing a show on Zoom. I mean, Peter, that's an interesting question, though.
I can't imagine that.
Yeah, no, neither can I.
Well, cheers for audacious thought, you know? I give them points for that. There's a little something about, sort of perhaps too ripped from the headlines. But other than that, that's the way it works.
Yeah, well, I mean, Vince.
Well, it is a new show, so it's a young show that they're probably trying to, you know, not have be a victim of everything.
Right.
So maybe
you have to
a little bit more than the next.
You have to keep putting out content, and all these networks have to keep putting out content. But I was saying that Peter told me last time we had dinner, Peter goes, "You got to see this show, Succession." And I went to San Diego.
Oh, I love that show.
Well, I do, and I don't. I went to San Diego the next week.
What?
And I binged both seasons, and I go, wow, this is some of the greatest writing I've seen on TV. And then I said to myself, but this hits way too close to home. Now, if that hits way too close to home, if I couldn't handle Roger Ailes and Donald Trump, I'm too big of a pussy to want to watch anything about Contagion and the coronavirus, and I don't have any interest in that. You know, for me, Succession hits too close to the gut. But yeah, I mean, Peter was totally right, and I wanted to thank you for that. It is amazing writing on that show.
It's hilarious. Oh my God, it's so dark.
Even in episodes that don't work. And there aren't many of those,
right.
By the way. It's a wonderful show. But even in the episodes that don't work, you routinely find a couple of scenes that just take your breath away. They're so well executed.
Yeah, I feel like you have to kind of have like an immunity to bullshit to enjoy that show. Like, I'm just too sensitive about it. It makes me think about, like, all these rich people that get away with whatever the fuck they want, and there's no consequences, and I'm like, I'm watching this show, I just get angry. But it's great. But it's just it's a hard watch for me. I think you have to have, like, an immunity to giving a shit to really enjoy that show.
No, you have to have a dark soul that likes comedy, Matt.
Well, yeah, there's that, too.
The comedy in it is so lusciously dark.
There's that, too. Yeah. And what else are you watching right now, Peter? Anything good since you recommended Succession?
It's a free-for-all because I'm sure it's interesting for a lot of people because, you know, how many times have you said over the last 3 years or 4 years when there's been so much content, how many times you have said, well, someday when I have time, I'm going to catch up on all the things that I said I would watch if I ever had time. So I'm sort of not doing that. You know, I realize that some of those things, I mean, and it's embarrassing, the stuff that I didn't really watch.
Yeah.
So that I always said I would watch someday, because that includes Breaking Bad.
Wow.
I've never seen a full episode of that. So that's terrible. And I, you know, but it seems so daunting, you know, that it's like, oh, I can't start.
I know. I feel the same way as you, where it's like 7 seasons or 6 seasons or something. I'm like, oh, that's so much work.
Yeah.
You just think, it's just, I can't get involved. So it's been a smorgasbord of whatever just strikes my fancy on, you know, Amazon or whatever. So I watched a bunch of Sherlock Holmes things that were made by Granada Television in the late 80s or mid 80s.
Nice.
And those were, you know, those were kind of good, although I got to say, you know, I kept watching them going, well, boy, Sherlock is so amazingly good. And this is, you know, of its time, but they were, you know, still good. And 2 nights
Peter,
ago, I think I watched.
Peter.
Yes.
I just want to jump in for 1 second. There's also a Japanese Sherlock on HBO that is really, really, really fun. like really great whodunit, very much like Murder, She Wrote in the 80s. It has that kind of like vibe to it, but it's all in Japanese and it's HBO Japan. It's called Sherlock and it's a female Sherlock. They flipped it. It was a fun watch. Anyway.
Okay, yeah. Right. Yeah. But I watched, what else did I watch? I watched the, I don't know, the NEK movie, the Court Jester, because I hadn't seen that in a million years. So I watched, you know, it's just whatever grabs me. I've seen some weird shit. I watched like this old Dickens movie from 67 or something called Fitzwillie.
No.
You know, it's really a nightmare what I'm watching.
What are you doing a lot of writing right now? Are you like using this time to write a lot or spec or anything?
Well, you know, this is again an embarrassment because there is something I should write. There's a movie that is definitely under the, if I ever had the time, I would write this movie, and I have not done anything. But I'm using the excuse that I am writing something. I just started a new overall deal at FX back with the home team. And so I pitched a show to them, which I am writing now.
Oh, that's great. Well, that's good.
Fabulous.
Right. So you're doing a lot of, you work. What else have you been doing during all this? Yeah. What else is there to do? Do you, Alan and I, we were talking about how we go on long walks. That's like the height of our excitement.
Yeah. And you know, it's something to be enjoyed. I have to say, the last time I took a walk I live in Century City and I looked up at the sky and I thought, God, the sky is so blue today. It's so blue, you know? And I thought, that doesn't happen in LA.
No.
Usually, I can't see this die.
We now have the cleanest air in the world. Did you guys hear that?
Oh, it's fantastic. It is fantastic.
Like literally, we literally have the cleanest air in the world as now.
Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
So there's that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there are things that I've never done before. Like, you know, when you get to be about 50 years old, you start getting things in the mail from AARP,
mm-hmm.
and that's almost like somebody insulting you through the mail. You know, when they send you that, you get that envelope, and you think, this isn't for me. This is clearly some error that's been made. I am not the target audience for this, and you chuck all that stuff in the bin. You know, but recently, Whole Foods said that, you know, seniors, anyone that's 60 and above, by the way, could get into the store an hour before it opens. Well, who was first in line? Let me just say.
That's a smooth move.
Like the one time that I claimed to be a senior, I just jumped at it. And that was really enjoyable.
If,
that was fantastic. Other than that, I really haven't gone anywhere much. I did, you know, I have a feeling that the drugstore, in sort of a roundabout way, I mean, they're supposed to be helping me, is actually trying to kill me because it keeps sending me updates of medications. Now, I don't have that many medications, but they keep refilling them way faster than I need them, which requires that I go pick them up. And, you know, you don't want to go to a drugstore now because if you're in a drugstore, you need drugs.
Yep.
You know, so you might be sick. So I go there and there seems to be a guy at the window. And so I wait a distance, you know, obviously behind him. And a woman says to me on the side, I'm sorry, the line is over here. And I said, oh, excuse me, I just didn't look around the corner. And as I move to sort of stand behind her, at a distance, and she's wearing a mask, she says, I'm staying away from people because I have a cold or something.
Oh.
And I thought,
or something.
Yeah, or something is bad to hear right now.
Yeah, who in this time says, I've got a cold or something?
No, that's anyway, yes.
I'm not going back to the drugstore.
I've been timing it out so I have to pick up all my meds at the same time. I'll like skip my blood pressure med for like a couple days just to make sure they were all synced up, and then I just go at the same time now because I can't do it anymore. Yeah, the pharmacy's awful. What I was going to also ask, we just found out Broadway shut down now till June 7th, at least, at minimum. Is that what you're are you expecting with Broadway goes the entertainment business, TV and film? I mean, I'm taking meetings and stuff, but, you know, I don't know much that's getting, like, obviously nothing's getting produced at the moment. So what do you expect? Right. Do you expect they're all to be kind of in sync on this?
No, I don't. I think they're different things. You know, Broadway requires you to go into a place and sit very close together for 2 or 3 hours. So that's an unfortunate requirement at this point. Television and film doesn't really have that. You know, you can, I mean, for a cinephile, I mean, clearly you want to be in a theater and you want to see it on a big screen, but that's really not the way that most film works anymore. And television definitely doesn't. So I don't think it's going to, you can't look at that and sort of draw a line to the rest of the industry.
Yeah, it's just weird because Broadway as an industry came together and says, we're not, obviously, and you're right about it, it's like you can't rehearse, you can't put on a show, nothing. With Hollywood, when do you think production's going to start again? As soon as this ends, like, are they all going to get together and decide on a date? How do you think that's even going to work?
I don't know. I mean, I think at a certain point, we're going to have a sense of the life of this thing and, you know, when it might be safe to get a toe back into the water. So,
yeah,
believe me, I think that sooner, you know, that's going to happen sooner rather than later. Nobody's going to be overly prudent, but the same, I mean, they're going to be cautious, but not overly cautious. So I think it will start at some point because they're, you know, look, ultimately, the good news is, I mean, there is a need. There's always going to be that need for, I started to let the dog in. There's going to be a need for material. I mean, it's always going to be. We're talking about what we're watching on television now. So there's always going to be that need.
Yeah. I mean, there's just this sense that.
Whose dog is that? Matt, is that your dog?
It actually may be, but she would be, that's far away. Wow, she's loud. Okay, I pardon me. I don't even know where I was now. Oh, I was talking about this piece of shit business that we're in. Oh God, what were we talking about? Now I'm distracted by the dog
thing.
What are
you saying about when it was going to start again?
I've been talking to people, and everyone's like, "Well, these networks are blowing through content." And I'm like, oh, okay, so you're going to need more content. And they're like, yeah, but we don't know when we're going to have to, when we're going to get to film it. And I'm always, like, a little weary of, like, who's going to be the first person to put their toe in the water and say, we're filming. I feel like it's going to be an entire company that has to do it, like ABC or Disney or Warner Brothers. They're going to just have to be like, okay, we're going to go back to work. And that's how I feel it's going to go, at least. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think there's going to be some sort of common sense thing that happens where people go, well, you know, here's how we're going to do it. And if you show up for work and we take your temperature. And if you have a fever, you can't, you've got to go home. And don't touch anything. And there's going to be all these different changes so that we're not all touching the same thing. You know?
Yeah, a screening process.
Yeah, that's how they've been doing things with other things that are still in production, like the WWE, I know, is still in production with Vince McMahon, because why wouldn't it be? And but I mean, that's what they're doing. I was told by someone that works there, I was told that, you know, they take the temperature of everybody. If you're not essential, I don't know what's essential in the wrestling business, but if you're not essential, you're not needed. And you're not there, or you'll Zoom in, or you'll Skype in. But yeah, they've been taking some precautions. It still feels very dicey to me. you know, I heard that Dana White of the UFC just bought a private island so he could put on his UFC matches. I don't know anymore. Extreme. I don't know anymore.
Right. I think I'm in the wrong business.
Yeah, right. If you want to go back to work, you should have gotten into combat sports.
I just think I was in the there was a point where I was came down to either writing or wrestling, and I just knew I picked the wrong direction.
It was one or the other.
Yeah, it was one or the other.
Yeah, totally.
I had the persona and the whole thing.
Oh man. What would Peter Tolan's wrestling gimmick be? What would your gimmick be? What would your persona be?
I think I would be mostly a reader. You know, I'd be in my corner with a good book, and I'd be like, you know, excuse me, I'm trying to read, and then you know, after the fifth time, I'd get pissed off, and I, you know, then you'd see some action.
You'd be the literator early
in the match, but then you'd see it. I would come out.
Oh my god!
There's no stopping me.
What was your name for him, Hillary? The literator.
I said the literator.
Yeah, that's funny.
The literator. Yeah, exactly.
I like.
Yeah, the literator. Like it sounds badass, but it's really not when you drill down to it.
Yeah, that would be good. The literator. I would go with like Rodin, and people would think it was because it was like a Japanese monster. In fact, I was the thinker, you know. I was the thinker.
The thinker.
You know what, Peter? If that were part of wrestling, I would watch wrestling, honestly.
Exactly.
Oh, that's
yeah, I would like, be in for that.
Like Andy Kaufman meets wrestling, although he did that already.
Performance art. I like it.
Are you taking meetings or anything? Is like, are you doing the Zooms and the Skypes and all that kind of stuff going on? It seems to me like such a hassle. Well, it is. I mean, honestly, I hate them.
I've done a couple of things.
Yeah.
It's okay, but, you know, you're really faced with the quality of your internet service.
Yeah.
In these meetings, because you know, you suddenly go, "Oh boy, this is not as good as I thought." You know, so I've been getting liquored up at night and speaking to some friends over Skype, and so I sort of see, that's also kind of dodgy.
One of my writing partners was teaching a class because all the classes got moved to the internet. And his mom, this student in the class's mom brought him a sandwich on Zoom. And he's like, this is the new normal. A college kid just got handed a sandwich by his mother in the middle of my film theory class. This is what it's going to be. And I'm just like,
I had that. God damn.
Yeah, but I'm like, but that's kind of what I'm getting at with these meetings on Zoom is just like, oh my God, the privacy's gone. Like every Zoom call I've taken, Liam walks into the call and then everyone's got to stop. Everyone's got to admonish the 8-year-old, say hello. I'm like, oh, this is not business. This is not a real thing. I feel like this is bullshit. Like we're just bullshitting ourselves to seem busy. I get nothing productive out of conference calls.
Always have to adapt. Always have to adapt, Matty.
Yes.
Always adapt. Always.
Well, we're trying. You know? We're doing all this podcasting, and then I'm doing as much writing as I can, and you know, we're trying to get shows made and movies made, but it's just so hard when you can't like go to lunch with someone, go to their office, go talk. And I've been hearing this from a lot of people. It's just the new normal at the moment, and people are not adapting as well as Peter is, I guess. I know Hillary Hillary's an extrovert. Yeah, so
what's that?
I know Hillary's an extrovert, so I mean, if she's adapting, I should be able
to.
I should be able to, but haven't gotten there yet.
If I can do it, literally anyone can do it. I'm like the most social person you will ever know in your life.
I believe it.
And if I can stay at home by myself for 4 weeks, with just my dog, I think anyone else can do it.
No, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I realized, you know, when I was a kid, you know, I used to love when it rained.
Yeah.
And it was probably partially, not that we missed school, because you know, it would have to be Plague of Toads or something like that. Then you'd miss school,
right.
Maybe. Yeah. But it was more just like, I liked to be inside. And I liked to feel safe from the elements and everything like that. So this is sort of like the same thing, where it's like I have an excuse to stay home and just lay about in sweatpants. It's fantastic. It's really great.
I actually did think about it. I go, if one person suited for this, it's Peter, who doesn't like going out all the time. This is
it's worked fantastically. And also, my husband is not here. He's in Taiwan visiting his mother. And that means that our relationship isn't suffering at all by the fact that we're cooped up together. Because it would have, by this time, what is it, like a week and a half, we would have been in manslaughter territory.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh,
I would have just some level of gunplay, and, you know, it would not have ended well. So everything is working out, I have to say.
Yeah, that's good.
For me.
That high divorce rate is not going to apply to you, Peter. That's good.
Not going to hit me.
I'm waiting.
Nope, not you.
I remember at the beginning, people were like, how many babies are there going to be in 9 months? I'm like, how many divorces?
My friends, my friends who have kids say, nobody who has a kid is ever going to have another kid during this. She goes, it's all going to be firstborn. It's all going to be firstborn children. There's no way it's going to be an additional child.
No, I'd have no interest in that right now. People are going to kill each other during this.
There's no time.
Pretty much.
There's really no time to escape and step back and consider life choices. You're just right up in the grill of your life choice.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah.
From when you get up to go to bed, which has to be pretty sobering for people, because normally, just, you know, like you were saying, you apparently like to go out and have meetings and talk to people in person. But I think you're really trying to escape your miserable life.
Oh, I'm trying to get away from everything. That's why I'm always on the move. I don't want to be home. Get me out of here.
Oh my God, that fucking dog. I don't blame you.
Yeah. I'm gonna send the dog by you. This dog won't shut
alone.
The fuck up.
That alone.
It's killing going out. Like, I can't dine out anymore, which sucks. I don't need the country to be the way it was, but I just need a little more room for freedom, a little more space to do things. Because I'm in Chicago right now, and we've talked about it. I'm with my mom and Liam, and Peter, I'm homeschooling Liam 4 hours a day. And then I'll do one of these, which is an hour, and then take on another 30 minutes for editing. Then I'll do, I'll write, or I'll take meetings. Hillary knows I've been taking meetings this whole time. And
we're inventing new shows out of this whole quarantine.
But I worked less when there was no quarantine. I had more free time. I had more of a life when there was no coronavirus. So be blessed that you are by yourself in your condo, your home, whatever. Because I would die for that right now. I just want to be alone for 10 minutes.
I mean, I'm caught up in the idea of you homeschooling a child for that many hours a day. I think that's really a call to social services.
Oh, Peter, not only that, but like whatever, if people were not on board with getting teachers better pay before this, I hope that so many parents, I hope that people that were homeschooling were like, I fucked up, pay them whatever they want. Give them anything.
Yeah.
Because this is
one
kid.
This is a serious question.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a serious question, because I you know, luckily my children are all grown off yeah. to college, writing their thesis or whatever. So, when you're homeschooling, what curriculum are you following? Like, how do you know what to teach?
Well, his teachers send me every week a packet of, like, you know, there'll be like worksheets in it, math and words and sentence forming, because he's in second grade, and then they send home an iPad, and on the iPad is like six classes, and every day the class updates itself and gives you like a new assignment, but you're missing the whole process of like learning. I'm gathering all this information. We're doing the homeschooling, but for me, this is like you're skipping a step, because I don't know if Liam's learning anything new. I want to pretend he is, and I hope he is, but I feel like being in a classroom and having a lesson before you do the worksheets, before you do all the stuff on the iPad, I feel like that's the learning. This is just to prove you have learned something. So it's a little rough. Uh-huh. They don't give you, like, the lesson. They don't say, hey, teach your kid how to do this. They're just like, here's some subtraction worksheets. Have fun. And you're like, okay. And we'll do it. You know, so we're getting a lot of work done. But, you know, I read somewhere that 40,000 kids in L.A. have not checked into school since this has happened. Like, I feel like this is really going to hurt the education of a bunch of kids.
For sure.
Oh, yeah. Like, I should not be homeschooling anybody. Anybody. Okay? And then...
How many wrestling moves is he learning, Matt?
A lot. But like, the fact of the matter that teachers can teach 20 Liams, like, one teacher teaches 28-year-olds, all the respect in the world, pay them whatever they want, but I shouldn't be homeschooling. I have other friends that should not be homeschooling. You know, like it's not for me. I have to say, it's been the most challenging thing of this process. And plus, all the kids think this is like spring break times like 10 weeks. So it's impossible to get them to sit down and do anything. It's like, hey, wake up at 8, you know, I get up at 7 a.m. and I'm like, wake up, time to do school. And I basically get the 8-year-old version of the middle finger, and I'll see you at 11 a.m. when I feel like it. And you're like, okay.
I'm sure the Mountain Dew helps that.
Oh, it's wow. Fucked up. I'm over homeschooling. I could be done with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Be lucky, Peter, that you don't have to do any of that. And Hillary. Be very fortunate that you don't have to do that.
What are you talking about? I'm homeschooling my poodle, Matt. Yeah, come on.
Yeah.
I'm working on her every day. Every day. We're working on stuff. So, you know.
Oh.
Yeah, I talked to some friends, you know, and said, What are you doing? Like, what are you doing differently? And these are people with younger children. So, and they say, well, you know, I work at night normally, and now I don't have a job. So we're having a lot of family dinners. And I'm like, well, that's great. You know, that's great.
Yeah, we've been doing the family dinner.
At Whole Foods, you know, me in line at Whole Foods. I the first time I did it, the line was actually fairly long. So I wondered how they were going to deal with some of the more infirm seniors who were out very early on a Sunday morning in Beverly Hills looking to get into the Whole Foods.
Yeah.
But I thought, I stood in that line and I thought, boy, I'm never going to take for granted the fact that I could just walk into a store, buy what I want, know it's going to be there, and walk out. Like, I'm not going to take that for granted anymore.
Yeah, I'm with you on that too. I'm with you on that.
Look at the world, you know? Yeah.
I had to buy 2 half loaves of bread the other day. Because there wasn't a full loaf on the shelf.
You buy a whole loaf, by the way.
I tried. Really? They didn't have them. So I had to buy 2 half loaves, and I'm like, I'm never taking this for granted ever again. Like, this is ridiculous. Yeah. I don't think anyone's taking Clorox wipes or Lysol wipes for granted ever again.
No.
And toilet
wipes, aka toilet paper.
But I will say this: all my friends that are not in America, they're in another country. They find the funniest thing being, and Peter, you could probably speak to this because your husband, who's in Taiwan at the moment. Like, they think the funniest thing in the world is our obsession with toilet paper.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I have friends in Italy who are like, and Italy going through the worst, and they're still having a laugh over how stupid fucking Americans are with the toilet paper.
Yeah. So I don't understand. I've never figured out what the toilet paper thing is.
No, me either.
I mean, it's not even like this is like a shit disease. It's not.
No.
You know? No. You're going to be wiping your ass that much, so I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't get it either, and I think it's one of those mysteries we're never going to really solve, is like, why did you need to buy 72 rolls of toilet paper at a time? I don't think we're ever going to get through that, but I think it's always going to be on America's record that during this time of a global pandemic, we were most worried about wiping our asses.
I just
think, going down in history for sure.
the great thing about the world now, which is probably causing a lot of frustration too, is there was a time when stupid people, you didn't have to know about them. Like, I always assumed that people as like Americans, you know, were you know, like the people that I knew. They were sort of educated, somewhat kind. Open-minded, you know, I just thought that's what the world was. But unfortunately, there was this thing called the internet, and then this thing called social media, where everybody can just sort of put the world on display, and you realize, although you should know this, obviously, when a shitbag like Trump gets elected, that people are stupid, that the vast number of Americans are ill-educated, small-minded, and cheap, frankly. So they just don't care about the facts about anything. They just see one thing about somebody buying 90 rolls of toilet paper, and they go, that's what I have to do.
That's true.
Peter, last night, Matt and I had a conversation about what makes content now edgy, like what's the definition of edgy, an edgy TV show. And we kind of came around to the idea that edgy these days is acceptance and tolerance. Like, that's an edgy thing in America because not everybody does it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's a concept. People go, wow, that's wild. Acceptance and tolerance.
Yeah, that's a wild concept. Oh, my gosh. Let's be accepting and tolerant and allow for other types of. Yeah, right. That's edgy these days, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we do have a ton of stupid people, though. We were, when I was in college, my dad didn't want me to do this for a living, so I'm like, okay, I'll do a real major and write scripts as well. And I was going to teach math for a while, and once again, we just talked about the homeschooling. That would have gone very poorly.
Yeah, and you can't handle subtraction on an iPad.
No,
you're going to teach math.
No, I made the right choice. But this is when George W. Bush was in office, and I looked at the numbers of where we ranked at the time, and where we ranked in the time was in the teens in literacy and in math. We were in the teens in world, you know, in the rankings of the world, and then he pushed that terrible program, that terrible education program, No Child Left Behind, and just a terrible program that was all about standardized testing. And I said, we're fucked. I'm out. I can't teach. I'm not going to teach standardized testing. We are fucked. And within 10 years, we now are ranked 24th and 26th in literacy and math. We are not smart as a country. Just it's Anyone that thinks that we're intelligent as a country, it's a lie.
Yeah.
The coast are good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a sad situation. But let's talk about a happier situation. So Peter's now back at FX, back with the home team, back where he made the hugely popular Rescue Me to everyone but Ken Levine. And here we are. But let's not forget also, I read the greatest story ever, and I was wondering if you could share with us a story about this man. But our great friend Bruce Fretz, who is actually interviewing Chris Lloyd right now, so he couldn't join us. Modern Family's ending this week, so there's a lot of brouhaha about all that. And but Rip Torn passed away last year, and Peter did this great piece with Bruce about Rip Torn, but I know you got a lot of funny Rip Torn stories. Could you share one with us? I love Rip Torn stories.
Well, I mean, the perfect story about Rip, just because, and it's sort of a, you had to be there because, and you had to know just the level of lunacy that we had to deal with Rip. I mean, he's a nut. And it sort of goes beyond just the usual, like, you know, the CIA is following me sort of thing, which there was that too. But I mean,
oh my gosh.
He had everything. He had a mixed bag of everything. So, and he was, he could be very abusive. And he would sort of, it felt like he would pick somebody on the crew or another person, actor of the show, never Gary, of course, but somebody else, and just make their life miserable. It's just what he did.
Yeah.
So that went on for quite a while, and I blew up at him finally at the end of the third season. And I don't remember when this story happened, but let's just say we had already suffered a great deal with Rip. So now we've got Burt Reynolds on the show. He's on an episode of the show. And somebody, not from our show, like it was somebody from maybe Bill Gray or somebody, said, just take care of Mr. Reynolds, just get him whatever he wants, was how it was put. And apparently what he wanted was a bottle of vodka and a bottle of tonic. So this kid didn't think to ask anybody if that was a normal request. He just went off and got it and delivered it. To him. So I guess maybe Bert had some, and he was acting out a little bit. And at a certain point, he's playing Larry's neighbor, and he's supposed to, he has this whole scene over a fence. And it's sort of this fake terracotta fence and brick and whatever else. And at a certain point, Bert just loses his shit and he's screaming and clawing at this fake wall and ripping pieces of this fake brick off and just flinging them at the crew.
Oh my God.
You know, and then just completely melts down and stomps off stage and disappears. I'm standing next to Rip. So we watch this whole thing unfold, and I just look over at Rip, and Rip looks at me and goes, "Bert's a troubled boy."
Well, hold on. Matt.
Wait. I'm sorry. I'm just...
All right. So much for that story.
No. I'm still laughing. First of all, I've been laughing since the ripping of the fake brick off the wall because I visualized it.
Well, the fact that after everything he put us through, that Rip could actually go, "Bert's a troubled boy."
Yeah, right.
I just went... pot and kettle someplace in
this,
here.
This is a man who drove
coming to mind.
This is a man who drove a car through a bank with a Christmas tree on top of it. I believe it.
What?
Oh yeah. Oh, I got so many good Rip Torn stories. Oh yeah. He was a cupcake. Yeah. He was
cupcake.
Oh my God.
The story about his last arrest, which was, you know, breaking into that bank
in
his hometown.
What?
You know, he had Yeah, he had gotten.
How have I never heard of him?
Oh, this was reported. This is, I think, somewhat well known. But he got pretty juiced up, and he went to a bank, and got in, broke in apparently, and they, of course, alarms went off someplace, and the cops showed up, and with his sleep on the couch in the lobby of the bank.
Oh my Jesus!
His defense was that he had confused the bank for his home.
No.
So, I mean, and that,
get the fuck out of
yes,
here.
Well, look, that could happen in small town Connecticut, because, you know, sometimes the local zoning people will make the bank look like a house, you know, so it looks like a house. So that's sort of understandable. Okay. You can sort of buy that maybe he, you know, whatever. You sort of buy that. Now, still, you can't break into a bank. There's this banks are touchy about that.
Yeah.
And apparently, the reason he got away with it was because that when he went in and got on the couch, he took his boots off.
Oh,
and
my
so,
God.
And they said, well, clearly, if he thought he was home, he would have taken his shoes off. And so that was what they used as the defense, was that he really did think he was home. And he got some sort of, you know, probation or something like that. But he didn't get in trouble for trying to rob a bank. So anyway, that's Rip.
No, we don't think Rip was trying to rob a bank. No.
Oh. No. I don't
think
that's
an epic story.
He would not try to rob a bank. We had a huge fight because he was so ill-edged. And at one point, Gary and I hauled him in, if you can imagine such a thing, Gary and I hauling Rip in. And we were just gonna lay the law down. And Gary, God bless him, did, you know, he's not the most confrontational person in the world. And he said to Rip, flat out, like, you're a bully and you're really difficult, and we have to, you know, what do you say to that? And Rip just sort of knew he had us by the balls, because what were we going to do, fire him?
Yeah, right.
You know, he's like great on the show, so it's not like we could get rid of him. And he knew that, so he just stared at us like, go ahead, keep talking, boys, it doesn't mean anything, you know. It was really something.
Did that ever make it awkward for Gary to act with Rip? Because it's weird that Gary has to be the boss and act with him at the same time. Is that ever an awkward, tense situation with Gary Shandling and Rip Torn?
Well, again, you have hugely confrontational versus non-confrontational.
Right.
However, Rip was not blind. Like, he knew that all good things sprang from Gary. So he did not act out against Gary. He just, it was everybody else or whoever that week. But I was sick of it, you know, and it was near the end of the third season. So we went through the script, and then I went with Gary, the director, and we talked through the notes. And then the director said to me, as he was going to give the notes, would you come with me to give these? And I said, I don't think I could. I don't know why I never would have said that. I just knew that my breaking point was coming. And I went out and the first note, like, decimated, like, Wally Langham's part for the week, you know, that big wall of Phil, the Wally or whatever his name was. I can't remember. Like, Bill, the writer, Phil. It sort of decimated his part. They didn't say anything. And then I made one little cut that took out a little piece of Rip's line, and Rip started grousing. He's less like, oh, I guess I shouldn't have come in this week. I guess I should have gone to Tahiti. You know, I swear to God, that's I still
wow.
And I said, Rip, I just cut Wally's part in half, and he didn't complain. And I've taken one little piece of the line, and what the fuck? And I just lost it. I mean, I just,
oh my God!
Bursting to scream at him.
Oh my God!
And I'm on my feet, screaming at him across the table. I said, get out of here. I'm sick of looking at you, you motherfucker. Fuck you. And now he's up. And so now, you know, two middle-aged white guys like yelling at each other across the table. And I'd like, at a certain point, I'm yelling at him and he's yelling at me, but he's not leaving. I'm telling him to leave and he's not leaving. So I just figured, okay, let's just finish the note.
Wow.
My favorite is
goddamn
Bruce Fretz calls.
And I'm not looking at him. Okay. I'm not looking at him, but I'm just sort of focusing on my end of the table. But somebody, one of the women on the show, was across the table at my end, and she got my attention. And she took one finger and ran it down next to her eye and nodded towards Rip to say that Rip was crying. So I was like, okay, well, that's good. That's good. So then the he pushes away from the table and says, well, I guess I should call my agent or my lawyer or whatever he said. And he stomps off. He listens to boom, boom, all the footsteps. And the door opens and the door closes and everybody at the table bursts into applause.
Oh my God.
They've been waiting for all that time for somebody to call this guy out his shit. So here's the thing. This is not where the story ends, of course. I am not somebody who loses his temper. I just don't do it. Mm-hmm. And it really disturbed me that I had gotten away from my that. And I was talking to my wife at the time about it, saying, I think that it was, you know, really unprofessional of me. And I was sort of obsessing about it. This is a location that could only exist in show business. At the ACE Awards, I was at the Awards ceremony, the Edsel of Awards now. And I was there, and it was they gave out like 90 awards in 15 minutes. It was like one of those things. And while I was there, I started thinking about a show I could do on Larry Sanders about what happened, about this fight that I had. And I saw Rip again at the Emmys, where he greeted me like, you know, the true mark of alcoholics. You know, he'd greet, oh, my mother, I'm sorry, you're my brother, I love you. Like this. And I said, I have a show for you, Rip. And the show started up again, and I did this episode, which was called Arthur After Hours, I think it was called. That was the title of it. And Ari and Larry something happens, and they have a fight, or something happens that Artie is wounded by. And Artie spends the night in the studio, and he does all these things. It's like a tour de force for Rip. He does Shakespeare. He sings with a karaoke machine at stage center on the set. He does all these things. And during the course of the evening, he meets a Romanian or Lithuanian, or I can't remember, janitor who comes in, and they bond. They don't really speak the same language, but they sort of do the same thing. Artie cleans up during the day, the janitor cleans up during the night, and they bond. And of course, given that it's Artie, they fall apart. They have a fight and it all falls apart, and then the episode ends. And I never told Rip, but I'm the janitor. I'm the guy. We're both trying to do the same thing. We're both trying to make this show. We're just doing different parts of it, and we can't communicate. So that's what it really was about.
Yeah,
and
that's so good.
Of course, the motherfucker won an Emmy for it.
Yep.
Of course. He never told him, even after he won.
I want to point out, I did not, but he did. And in fact, that was the first and only Emmy that the Larry Sanders Show won for quite a while.
Wow. I remember.
Of course it is. Because it can't.
Peter told me that one, and
show business is not fair.
No,
show business is not fair.
That's what I was gonna say. Peter told me that at dinner, and I go, only in Hollywood. That's a very Hollywood ending right there. My favorite though was Bruce calls me one day, Bruce Fretz, and he goes, And it's after Rip Torn died, and he goes, "I'm gonna sit down with Peter. He's very busy. He's gonna call me, and we're gonna talk about Rip, and I'm gonna do this article for Closer magazine." And I'm like, "Oh, awesome! Tell me how it goes." And I get a call back a few hours later, and he goes, "Well, I don't know if I can use any of the stories in the magazine because of all the language." So the article comes out, and Bruce sends it to me. And I swear to God, Peter gives him all these stories. He's using the F word, the C word, motherfucker, everything's in there. And Bruce sends me this article, and all it talks about is Rip Torn was an avid gardener, says Peter Tolan.
No, shut up.
I should point out that was also true.
Yes. No, it's true.
If he was just an asshole, then I could have written him off. I could have written him off a long time ago. But he wasn't.
Yeah, right.
He was this like all people, except for Trump. Like they, you know, they have interest, you know. And Rip, he liked to hunt, but he also liked to garden. And we would, and that's where we, I had. As a kid, I worked in a nursery, and so I knew things about plants, planting, and all that. So we could connect on that level. Like I'd say, "What's in your garden? What are you growing right now?" Yeah. Whatever. So that's how we could communicate with each other, was through that, and we could find like this common ground. So yeah. Yes, I did say that to him, but of course, I did say a lot of cunts and fucks. And
No, it was just my
that's where the day janitor and the night janitor overlapped here.
Gardening.
That was like the Venn diagram of common ground.
That's it.
That was just it. My favorite is reading Rip Torn, avid gardener. I'm like, yeah, there it is.
Yep.
Yeah. Awesome. What a story.
You can always count on me for a corker of a story to include in an article.
I love Peter Tolan's stories. Well, I'm so grateful you joined us. We don't really have anything to plug. Do you got something to plug?
No. I don't. Although someday I have written a stage version of the book, The War of the Roses.
Yes.
The book of the War of the Roses, yes. Which is supposed to actually have a pre-Broadway run at in Maine this summer. That has fallen through, of course. But now we're looking to cast, and we're looking to find someplace else and go into Broadway a different way. But so that's something that certainly is exciting, and also I had a great time writing it.
Yeah. No, I was super happy when you ended up doing that. I'm excited about that. I don't know if I'll get to see it, but I'd like to. This is so War of the Roses, hopefully sometime soon on Broadway, whenever they open back up. And then what else do we got going on? If you guys need something to do, listen to these podcasts. Also, Landline is on Amazon Prime. You could go watch my last film and, you know, give it good reviews, bad reviews, whatever you want. I don't give a shit. But, you know, go to Amazon Prime. And then also, anything else going on, Hill? Anything I'm missing?
Gosh, I don't think so. I think we covered all the ground, Matt.
Okay. Well, it was great catching up with Peter. And then Michael Whitehorn will be on tomorrow. And we'll maybe Michael Whitehorn has some Rip Torn stories. That's
Tell Michael I said hello. I haven't seen him in a million years. So,
I will
tell him I said hello. I hope as well.
Yeah, he's the biggest fan of you too. Everyone loves each other on the show this week. It's kind of gross. We had Alan Loeb. Alan Loeb's begging me to go to dinner with Peter, and then you got Whitehorn, who I know is a huge fan of Peter. So fuck Ken Levine. It's all right. It's all good.
I'm not blaming Ken.
No, I'm just busting
people,
Ken's.
These were the people on his. I know you're looking to pick a fight. But I'm not blaming Kent. This is just the people on his who were, you know, writing in and saying.
No, I know. We've had Ken on the show. Ken's a good guy. I'm just fucking with him. But definitely go out of your way to check out Rescue Me. It's on FX now if you download the app for FX. It's one of the best shows of all time, and of course Peter had everything to do with that, and Larry Sanders, of course, which we just talked about, which is one of my favorite shows ever. Two of my favorite shows ever. So I mean, can't go wrong.
Yep.
Peter, thank you so much for doing this and giving me some of your time. I know how valuable it is at the moment. You're so busy.
I have a lot going on.
we all have so much happening. And I look forward to seeing you. Yep. I look forward to seeing you when I'm in LA and we're allowed to leave the house.
All right.
Exactly.
Yeah,
great talking to you, Peter.
You too, Peter. Right. You're the best.
Nice to meet you too. Okay.
All right. Thanks, bye-bye. Pete. Talk later.
Bye.